comes the sun, and I say it's all right.
I'm Will with the Soper Sun, bringing you half an hour of everything under the sun, a little news show we do here on KDNK on Thursdays. With me in the studio is Lacey Dunlavy. I get that halfway right?
Halfway right.
Dunlavy.
We'll go for 75% by the end of the end of this.
Okay. Great. I'm not a radio person. I'm used to just having to know how to spell it. Anyway, she is the new librarian here in Carbondale, about 2 weeks in.
Yes, this is week 3. So yes.
Awesome.
Close.
Awesome. Close on two fronts there. Good things to check. And Megan Tackett, our fearless reporter for the Soper Sun.
Hello.
So since we've got Lacey, which at least I'm pronouncing that right, I'm hoping.
So far, so good.
Okay, cool. In the studio, tell us about, we do have a story on you in this week's edition, but you're from Ohio originally.
Yes.
Represent. I was so stoked to read that you're a fellow Bobcat.
Oh, we are everywhere. We're like this invasive species, you know. I say it's a great place to be from.
Yes.
It's amazing that there's so many of us here.
That's exactly my joke. It's a great place to be from and a better place to leave, right?
Exactly.
I didn't quote you on that. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
I quoted you on the more cows than people part.
Perfect. As long as we got something about coming from Podunk, Ohio, then we're good.
Yeah, that's where we were going from. You're not so Podunk, right, Megan?
I'm a little less Podunk, yeah. I grew up basically Dayton, just south of Dayton. But then I went to school at Ohio University in Athens and the good stuff.
And we graduated.
We did.
We graduated. So it's also great when you leave Ohio and then when you tell people you went to Ohio University and that's not the joke anymore.
No, I had that moment. I think by the end of spring quarter freshman year, I looked around and was like, crap. 40% of my friends failed out.
Absolutely. Because it's spring quarter.
Exactly.
None of us were in class.
No.
Yeah. And then repeat for 4, if you were lucky enough, 5 years.
Right.
But we graduated.
I graduated with a degree in journalism and I work in journalism, right?
Check us out.
Yes.
Here's me and my degree in anthropology.
I didn't mean it as a slight. I was just like,
no,
hey, represent over here.
You got my CU Boulder degree. It is, in fact, actually 10 years since I graduated from high school today. I saw it in the pages of the past there. So I think I'm going to celebrate by paying off my student loans.
Good luck.
I'm down to like $50. It's something I could make happen today.
You should have told me. I would have brought a cake or something at the editorial meeting.
In 10 years. I mean, that's like pretty solid these
days. Well, and that's not 10 years from graduating college.
Okay, that's
high school.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, overachiever. Gets a degree in anthropology. Yeah. Now he's the boss.
No, but she's the boss too.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I'm still fresh enough that I can say that I'm still the person sitting behind the desk pretending to know what they're doing. So
right.
I plan to ride that out for at least a couple more weeks.
I was going
to
say, about a month, we're going to expect you to actually know what you're doing.
Good to know.
A little bit more background. You graduate in Ohio. You head to Boulder first, or Ned, actually.
Yeah. I moved straight from Athens, Ohio to Nederland, Colorado.
So you didn't move.
I really didn't. It was amazing, though. But then that kind of like ruined my perspective on where I wanted to live in Colorado. Like, how can you ever move to even Boulder or Denver after living in the mountains like that? So yeah.
Cool. And then you did spend some time in Boulder.
I did.
You managed
to
get first a kind of an internship position and then turn that into a job, which is always nice when you can make that happen.
I weaseled my way in. there's no other way to put it. So I was an intern and then I got some grant funds and then they had to keep me. So, and I was there for 4 years. So it started as a 3-month, you know, 1-quarter thing, and then 4 years. It was like a barnacle, like you're not going to let me go.
But tell us a little bit of what you told me about declassified. You didn't tell me specifics, but you were doing declassified military stuff.
Yeah.
You're spending time in the basement of Norland Library doing what exactly?
Going through old smelly books and boxes of things. So it was so many things that there's so many amazing people who have worked at CU or have some sort of affiliation with CU. And then all of the neighboring organizations like NCAR and the Geological Institute is right there. It's amazing. So they have all of this amazing stuff, but finding people to come in and that are like me, that are crazy enough to want to sit in a basement with all of this smelly old stuff isn't as common as it may appear.
Speaking of smelly old stuff.
Yeah. This is where it takes a turn.
tell me about your job at Eagle.
Yeah. So it was it's it was a great job. It was amazing. It was like you got to work in a library setting, which is infinitely more social than the basement in an archives. But then my job was just to go out and get to know people and ask them for their family heirlooms. And in areas like this, their family heirlooms directly connect to, you know, our street names and our building names and things like that. Those are the same families that came here in a covered wagon. And for some reason, when they saw the mountains, they didn't just stop. They decided to just keep going. Mm-hmm. So it was amazing just to get to know everybody over in Eagle County. But then living in Glenwood, it was kind of strange. So,
and what was it that made you decide to be in Glenwood instead of Eagle or Dotsero if you wanted to be, you know?
Yeah, well... So I like how you never mentioned that I could live in Vail.
I was not assuming.
We don't
speak that name in this valley.
That was the thing. It was, you know, when Eagle is right in the middle, basically, of Vail and Glenwood Springs, it was like, where can we see ourselves? And I was, whenever we would come here to Glenwood, to the Hot Springs Pool and do all the touristy stuff, we would always stay in Carbondale. And this was this, if I had to pick, it was, we wanted to be at this end of the valley. So for obvious reasons.
Well, and yeah, it sounds like you've got a lovely space set up with a husband and two dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. And a cranky old cat. Yeah.
Oh, you didn't mention the cat.
I know.
And I'm a cat lover. I'm very upset about
I don't like cats. So he just kind of fell into us.
It's no higher thing.
I grew up with barn cats. I didn't grow up with cats in my house.
That's fair. That's a different deal.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I guess I just, I like lots of fur in my house. So stuffed animals in every corner. It's perfect. So
does the cat have a literary name?
He doesn't. He was adopted, so his name is Carmel.
Carmel. Okay.
He had a sister named Candy.
You're sure it's not Caramel?
That's often asked. He responds to Carmel.
He responds.
Yes, he does.
He
that
is
alone
a special
is a miracle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So you've had 3 weeks to check out Carbondale's library.
Yeah.
What are you finding out about it?
It's everything I expected. I love it. You know, I wanted to stay in a small town, small mountain town. I want to be in a... Libraries are about the community. And if your community isn't interested, it really just takes away the whole thing. And so for me, if I was to ever accept the position that I have now, that was a crucial part of it. So I love it. I love when, you know, everybody that walks in the door, most of us know their name. Most people we just get to know them. And then the fact that that's our job and we get paid for it, is pretty cool too. So it's been great so far.
So, should we expect to see more archives out in the open or more events around those or anything, you know, sort of, hearkening back to your basement days?
I really hope so. And of course, I think every librarian has like a pet subject or a pet topic, like mm-hmm. something we're interested in. And I think that this area in general continues to surprise me and just how many people are genuinely interested in those sorts of things. So absolutely, I really hope so. That's absolutely a goal.
Yeah. You know, one resource that they have that I make use of every single week, and I would love to see more people taking advantage of, is the bound volumes of the Valley Journal, you know, and the Roaring Fork Review, its short-lived predecessor. Every week I go in there, I do Pages of the Past. I pull out some things that I think you might be interested in that give you a context. I get pretty good feedback on that, although we don't get a whole lot of online readership. I guess there's maybe a demographic Venn diagram there to consider. But, you know, and then this week we chose to do something a little different, and we printed almost the entirety of a whole story from 1974 about something that happened or is believed to have happened back in the late 1800s. You know, somebody who, you know, apparently, according to Joe Corthell and the people who told him, a group of gypsies was traveling through town. One little girl got sick and didn't make it and was buried in Weaver Cemetery, which was kind of a private family cemetery at the time, and is now also known as Evergreen Cemetery. It's administered by the town. It's public. There's a bunch of interments there. You know, that this girl's father asked Long of Long Store to keep a red handkerchief on that little iron cross, supposedly made out of a couple of wagon wheel ties. I will have to have somebody take a look at that and confirm it. And And, you know, the cross is there and it's not labeled and somebody's still keeping a red hanky on it. So it's kind of a cool old tradition. One of those things, whether it's true or not, it's a great story.
Well, and what I so love about what you did with putting that story in this week's paper is you and I had talked about that exact story is something, oh, we should look into and see if it's there's validity behind it or is it the stuff of legend? And then you look at pages past and, oh, our predecessors have already done this. We don't have to recreate the wheel. And I just think there's something really cool about that.
I think people in general would be really surprised at how interesting old newspapers are. I mean, really, obviously, we're all biased in this room.
yep.
Just to see, I mean, it's amazing. You know, there's a website called Colorado Historic Newspapers. It's funded by the State Library. Mm-hmm. It's entirely free for anyone, anywhere. You can get stuck looking at the advertisements, you know, like yes. Remembering when you know, this costs 10 cents or something. It's fascinating stuff. And then we have these bound volumes at the library, which is pretty unheard of. They don't keep well, and they take up a lot of room, so a lot of people, that's not usually what's kept. But this is why you keep that stuff, because mm-hmm. it's really cool.
Yeah, I think the Carbondale Avalanche is on Colorado Historic Newspapers, which was one of the first papers in the area, but there was a good couple decades that there was nothing in Carbondale, and then the Roaring Fork Review came in, and it's really cool to me to see what they thought was important back then. You know, there hadn't been a newspaper for a long time, and this was the first Christmas story that Pat Noel thought was worth telling. I see it, you know, and I said so in my editor's note, it's kind of that moment for them to write down some of that oral history. And so my hope is, you know, maybe every 40 years we'll reprint this story and keep it going, right? It's a ways for me to worry about again. But anyway, I appreciate you guys doing it, and I hope one of these days we'll have some bound Soap or Suns next to it.
Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Janine
was... Maybe just this issue because I'm in it, but after that, I mean, we'll see.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That'd be not much to bind. So I'd like to shift topics a little bit. Lacey, I don't know if you have to run, but... given that you're relevant in this next one, Jim Calloway, a big story that Megan put together. We had two excuses to talk about him. Why don't you tell me about that and about sort of the angle you took with it?
Sure. I try to be unbiased in most of my approaches, but Jim Calloway completely won me over. I'm not going to lie. It was a fun interview, and it was just sort of time to do a feature on him, like we discussed. You know, he had just gotten a nice little ceremonial plaque put up at Thunder River Theater Company. I was sorry to miss that. And now he's also going to be presented at an undisclosed time, I'm told. But he is confirmed to be receiving the Mount Soapers Historical Society's Hattie Award, which is a big deal. And so it was like, you know what? He's receiving some accolades. It's the right time to do this. Let's see if we can corner him and sit down. And it wasn't difficult to corner him at all. He was just like, yeah, come on by. And I went over to his place over in RVR, and you know, it's a perfectly beautiful, inviting home, but not ostentatious or over the top, which he certainly could have if he wanted to. And it was just one of those fun interviews that you get to do as a journalist, where you know, you come in and he's sitting there waiting. He's coming off of a knee replacement surgery right now, so he wasn't particularly mobile, but he was in his cozy, well-worn leather chair in his office, and you know, wanted to know about me before he'd let me ask him anything about him, and you know, is making sure that we've got black coffee. And it was really nice to have a conversation with such a well-known person. You know, you get to know the persona before the person, and also a person who's been written about several times. That was something we were doing. I was reading through all the things that have been written about him, and I'm thinking, God, what do you ask somebody? How do you write something that hasn't already been written about him? And so I really wanted to take the opportunity to talk about Jim the person, because it was just... You know, later on, we recorded it. I wasn't taking notes. It was just a very intimate conversation, and I just had my phone recording it. And when I was going back and listening to it later, what really stood out to me when I was no longer, you know, in the moment, what stood out to me was just how excited he got talking about the little things that make up Carbondale, right? You know, he talked about his history and coming from, he really truly is self-made, and, you know, coming from his Texas roots, and, you know, how proud he is of his twin sons who are his partners to this day. I mean, at 87 years old, he's still a principal with his sons and an Argentinian lithium producer that, you know, garnered a $265 million investment from Toyota. So it's not exactly small potatoes. And yet what he was getting most excited about was talking about Fat Belly Burger and his lunches at Poor House and, you know, the letters he'll get from families who had loved ones receive care from the cancer center at Valley View. And that's what makes his day. And, you know, he had one wall of his office that was just covered with article, like cutouts of articles that have been written about him. So I'm thinking, no pressure. There's enough room on that wall. There's space for one more.
There
right?
you go.
But that's not what he was focused on. He was focused on, hey, look at this family photo that's got five living generations in it. And he was just a little tyke, you know. And so I wanted to really talk not only about him as a human being in that regard, but then also, instead of his origin story, he is known as a philanthropist and, you know, very publicly make sure that he's not anonymous, because he does use the fact that his name is on all the plaques and the buildings and the walls as sort of a you know, humor filled, good natured peer pressure to the other people in the valley with means similar to his, saying, hey, man, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And at this point, I wanted to know, well, what helps him make the cut? Right. Like it's a fun. I mean, for me, I don't actually play the lottery, but it would be, you know, a crazy big book deal or something. What's the proverbial lottery? If all of a sudden I had money, what would you do with it? And which causes would get that money and that attention? And I wanted to know from somebody who has spent, you know, half a century doing that, like what makes the cut for him? And he would just light up. He had so many. I mean, of course, he's an honorary publisher for Soper Sun. He just recommitted to us and we're eternally grateful. He gives to Katie and Kay on this radio show, right? I mean, just about everything in this community that makes it distinctly Carbondale, he's got his hands in. And every time he talk about anything, whether it was the library or, you know, the Restore, he always described every single thing the exact same way. It was a community asset. He said, that's what I always ask myself. Is it a community asset? And if the answer to that is yes, if he's able, although he is a little maxed out right now, if he's able, yeah, he'll get involved in a way that makes sense. And he is so fond of the library. You should have heard him gushing about it, you know, just and when you guys were facing some budget cuts, he's like, well, Carbondale's library is going to be able to stay open longer than the quote unquote budget says it is. And I'm going to make sure of that. And I love that.
So I'm curious. Yeah. We reached out to your predecessor for a quote, since we figured she had had more interactions. But mm-hmm. what have you heard? What were you told upon?
Well, so Jim reached out to me. So he actually, I talked to him on my second day. And so I knew, obviously, his name is on our community room door. To say he has given to the library is just such an understatement. And so he called me. And so, we had a conversation. I wanted to know every way that I can contact him, just so I know exactly how to reach him. And the same thing. I mean, he really just wanted to know about me. He was, you know, I didn't know you were there. Well, you know, how are you? How's it going? You know? And then I'm thinking, it wasn't a normal interaction with a donor. You know, I've done that before. I've grants all of that. And usually it's like, oh, well, you know, okay, great. Here you go. That is not the case. And we are so lucky that we have so many people like that in this area, especially I want to give two amazing, like you said, community assets, because all of this stuff matters. It really adds up. And so, so far, I think Jim and I are on good ground, and I'm really excited to learn more about him.
I'm glad to hear it. I do have to say, you know, if Jim keeps putting his names on rooms, I'm going to have a lot of trouble in the calendar, because how do I keep the Callaway room and the Third Street Center separate from the Callaway room at the
library?
At the library, yeah. And pretty soon, you know, they'll just rename the poorhouse the Callaway, you know, but no, it's really cool to see as many things as he is in, because like you said, he's a major force in the Soper Sun. We didn't make his top seven. The Mount Soper Historical Society, which, you know, is giving him the award. You know, he's got these core you know, I can't even say few, 7 things that he's really interested in, but that doesn't stop him from supporting anything that he thinks might benefit the community.
Well, and I love that for his, you know, top 7, as it were, it's not just monetary. I mean, he still speaks, he considers Wes Boyd, the executive director of CARES, one of his good buddies. That's how he said, we're good buddies. Mm-hmm. We speak almost every day. You know, he had just had lunch with Colin Laird's wife, right? Because the connection with the Third Street Center. So at 87 years old, he's still got just such vitality that it's much more to him than just, oh, I'm writing the check.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and you see that what you were saying, sort of not only challenging other people of means to donate, but finding ways to bring the causes that he's interested in together. That photo is of the Thunder River Theater ceremony, but he's snuggling a cat that one of the Thunder River Theater folks adopted from CARE. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I've kind of noticed that Charlie is a CARE adoptee.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Thunder River Theater full of CARE adoptees. My house as well, although I don't know that that's related to Jim, but, you know, those connections are definitely happening a lot. Is that Lon who just walked by? Did we really just talk about his cat? And anyway, it kind of looked like him. So yeah, there's a lot of, George Stranahan has talked to me about wanting those organizations to collaborate more. And Jim makes us do that sometimes. Speaking of philanthropy, I really do want to give just a huge shout out and statement of gratitude to the folks at Sopris 100 who care. They're a new-ish organization. They basically, you can, I tried to link people back to it in our online article, but a group of women get together, they put $100 in a pot like a fishbowl, and they each submit a cause that they think would be worthy, and it could be a nonprofit, it could be an individual, you know, it's very flexible. It's not the red tape of your average charity, and they pick 3 of those out of the pot and talk about them, and somebody makes the pitch, and then they select a winner, and that winner gets, you know, if 100 people show up, it's $10,000. If 86 show up, it's 86. It's 8,600, which is not nothing, especially for small organizations. And in their second ever event, selected us, the Soper Sun. So
it really is.
It's we're in the middle of a fundraising drive, and also it's just a vote of confidence. We're very cool on that. So I'm hoping that folks, we're not going to toot our own horn too much, but I'm hoping that folks will take the opportunity to get informed about this organization. You can find links to the story we did back in January on the website. They're just such a cool group of women. Got the chance to connect with them yesterday, and we may bring them in on the show one of these days to talk about what they do.
I want to say their next meeting is in September
25th.
Okay. Speaking of playful peer pressure, I got a little chastised by a friend yesterday saying, why aren't you part of this organization? Now that your newspaper won, you don't have any conflict of interest.
Yeah. And, you know, I have an excuse for being male, but
I don't have an excuse.
There are sister organizations that invite everybody, that even invite kids and maybe have a lower, you know, rate of for them. So the really, you know, guys, if we want to get it together, we probably could. We could probably make this a thing ourselves. So we don't really have an excuse if we're on top of it. By the way, it is actually closer to 4:25. This is Katie and Kay, commercial free since 1983. Underwriting on Katie and K is an effective way to market your business. Reach your friends and neighbors in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond with Katie and K's reasonable underwriting packages. Email Greg at katieandk.org, and they're laughing at me about something.
You're so good. Keep doing it.
We're just in awe.
I'm going to ask you about that after. you're listening to Everything Under the Sun, little Soper Sun half-hour news segment. We're getting pretty close to the end. You are welcome to call in if you have any questions for Carbondale's new librarian or Megan Tackett or myself, Will Grandbois. 963-2976. Give us a call. You got a little window there. Otherwise, Megan, anything else you'd like to highlight from this week's paper?
Yeah, I want you to talk to me about bats.
Oh, bats. Did you like my little guilt trip in there? Nobody showed up for this bad event last Friday, and I got to just hang out in a field up at Faloha Meadows with a couple of bat biologists while they tried to trap them. Which was pretty darn cool. And I think I, if I say so myself, made for some decent photos. It was a, you know, it's a cool event. I'm a caver myself. So, the more I can learn about bats and get kind of informed and not just be that person listening when, what kind of bat, you know, oh, look, it's a bat. What kind is it? It's a little brown bat. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to believe you because I couldn't tell the difference. It was a very cool event. It sounds like there will probably be some other ones in the not so distant future over the summer. They're trying to get together with climbers because apparently bats in the West, whereas bats back east are really into the caves and the mines and tend to be in big groups, bats in the West tend to distribute a bit more. They're in cracks and under rocks and stuff. Climbers have a tendency to encounter them, and we're really trying. They're really trying to monitor these colonies because white nose keeps getting closer, and there are other, you know, other threats to their survival, and they tend to be a little bit antisocial. So we've got to keep an eye on them with some active intent there. So thank you very much for asking. That was my, you know, what you were talking about your time with Jim. I had just an awesome Friday, starting with Lacey and nerding out on historical stuff, and then you know, hanging out in a field with bat biologists, hearing them tell me all about all the terrifying and horrible things about insects. We had an insect expert there, and also really cool things. And it, you know, I totally nerded out. So, and then, you know, other things in this paper, you know, we've got Sloan stepping down. We broke that last radio show. The pot thing we mentioned, you know, it's kind of like we were ahead of the curve last week and we're still catching up. Big paper coming up next week. So stay tuned. There's no shortage of content.
Memorial Day and First Friday preview. Oof.
Yep. Should be good. Lacey, anything you'd like to add?
I'll just plug the library for summer reading programs.
Okay.
So we have a lot of really cool stuff going on in the library. We have...
She has notes.
I do. I do. Okay. Listen, he said...
You got 1 minute.
Okay.
Do it.
So this year we're having the Denver Zoo. We're having Steve Weeks Music. We're having Connie and Dave Elston. They do a magic show for kids. Garfield County Libraries is turning 80 this year. We've been around for 80 years. I know, right? So we're having an ice cream social on July 3rd. It's at noon right at the library. Come hang out with us. We're also going to be having different music and songwriting workshops. One of them in June. It's June 13th. It's actually with local band Let Them Roar. So they'll be at the library working with teens and kids or anyone that wants to come. Should be a pretty good time.
Okay.
Nicely done.
Yeah, stay tuned. And also stay tuned for Valley Voices Live coming up next. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.